My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
State Farm Insurance knows that understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount in protecting our future. We know what it's like to go from nothing to something, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm is here to help with funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
If you're looking for the most epic place on Earth, let's start at the base of a massive waterfall. Then trek through the thick jungle. Then climb to the peak of a snowy mountaintop. Then once you get there, keep going. Because with intelligent 4x4 and 7 drive modes and a Nissan Pathfinder, the search is the real adventure.
Available feature. Intelligent 4x4 cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
Every pass, shot, and dribble is immediately consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real.
Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, blood, and tears, real legacies.
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
You already know when and where to find these moments of unscripted, pure entertainment.
Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
Check me out at the annual Black Effect Podcast Festival happening Saturday, April 27th in Atlanta. Live podcasts are on deck from some of your favorite shows, including this one, Black Tech Green Money, and also some of the best podcasts in the game, like Deeply Well with Devi Brown and Carefully Reckless. Atlanta is one of my favorite cities in the world. I lived there for 2 years, actually. And my worldview, seeing us successful in every industry and not having any limits on our potential, largely was shaped by Atlanta. So to be there with you, doing this podcast, talking about how we build or leverage technology to build wealth, come on, man, it doesn't get better. I want to see you there. Get your tickets today at blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. I'm Will Lucas, and this is Black Tech Green Money. Alphonso David has committed his life to actualizing a more just and equitable world. His resume is pages long, but for the sake of this podcast, he's president and CEO of the Global Black Economic Forum, focused on reimagining what diversity, equity, inclusion, and opportunity looks like in global workspaces and marketplaces, as well as achieving the notion of economic justice for Black people all over the world. As someone who's worked across various sectors like he has, including public service, business, nonprofit, and more, how does Alphonso believe technology can be leveraged to address systemic inequalities?
I think that leveraging technology-driven solutions to address systemic inequalities really requires collaboration. It requires us to reach across sectors that consider challenges against marginalized communities or what marginalized communities are facing. And what I mean by that is we have to look in education. We have to look at wealth management. We have to look at policy advocacy. We have to look at health equity. We have to look at entrepreneurship. And in all of those different sectors, we can leverage technology-driven solutions to address systemic inequality. So as an example, if you look at education, technology can provide access to quality education and training, which is really essential to economic empowerment and other things that we think of when we generally think of education. And the educational platforms can really break down barriers to education for marginalized communities to support resource-challenged public schools and maybe provide students with skills and knowledge that can help close the wage gap. So you take another example, wealth management. Fintech innovations such as mobile banking and digital wallets and peer-to-peer lending can expand access to financial services for underserved populations, including those with traditional banking accounts and credit histories. So by providing alternative financial solutions, technology can help marginalized individuals build assets and improve their economic resilience. And then maybe we think of healthcare as another sector. Telemedicine and mobile health applications can improve access to healthcare services for communities with limited physical access to medical facilities. And so if you're living in a remote setting, for example, where it's difficult to gain access to other resources that people have if they live in urban areas, telemedicine can be incredibly helpful in addressing the gaps in healthcare delivery and, in fact, empowering people to take control of their own health.
You said a couple things in there I want to point out. One, you mentioned the phrase wealth management. I believe you said wealth generation also, but I'm not positive on that one. But I was thinking about reading your background. You know, you've been involved in some really groundbreaking legislation helping push those things, pushing things forward, and particularly around, you know, social and economic systems. Is there an imperative for Black people to build wealth? Like, do we have a responsibility to build wealth?
Yes, yes, and yes. Look, as Black people, we have centuries of colonization, enslavement, and systemic inequality that have impeded our ability to gain financial freedom and the dignity that we actually deserve. And when we talk about financial management, when we talk about wealth generation, often people want to divorce it from colonization. They want to divorce it from slavery. They want to divorce it from systemic inequality. And we can't do that. We have to sort of recognize the systems that we operate within and how important it is that we take our personal liberties and use those liberties that we have gained from our ancestors to achieve financial freedom. You know, the most recent data from the Federal Reserve survey, I think Joe, it indicated during COVID that the wealth gap widened.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Between 2019 and 2022, you know this, the median wealth saw an increase. However, the wage gap or the wealth gap increased for people who are racial minorities. And if you put an even finer point on that, when Martin Luther King gave a speech on the March on Washington in the 1960s, the wealth gap was 8-1. And today that wealth gap is 12-1.
It's gone away. It's gone the other way.
It's going the other way. And as much as people talk about, you know, advancements in technology and advancements in economic empowerment and all of the other categories, we're seeing this gap increase between white and Black people. We take another category, housing equity. We're seeing that Black households showed some improvement, but we're also seeing a gap with respect to house home equity, whether Black people actually have the ability to purchase homes and hold on to those homes. We're seeing existing and exacerbating disparities. So what I would say to your question is, we have to think about the centuries of systemic discrimination in public policy, in financial practices, in societal norms that have hindered our ability to acquire Black wealth. And it's all of our individual and collective responsibilities to address that, not only through structural reforms, but also our individual actions.
So I'm going to ask this a different way. You're saying it's not okay then to be comfortable with your little salary taking care of you and your little house. Is that safe to say?
That is safe to say. You know, that is safe to say because I have to often think about the work that I do and why I continue to do it, what motivates me to do this work. And I often think back to our ancestors and the folks that were killed, that were murdered, in order for us to be in the position that we're in. So just putting that lens on and thinking about the responsibility that we have to further advance the interests of marginalized communities and specifically Black people. Not only do we owe it to ourselves, but the systems that we operate in were intentionally created to oppress us. So you're either going to be subjugating yourself to a process and a system that exists to oppress you, or you're going to work to overcome those systems collectively as a community and also individually.
I like that. So when you think about Black entrepreneurship, in those even using technology or building technology, Black entrepreneurship, what, in your opinion, are some of the most pressing issues and concerns facing us?
Well, I think what you will hear most often from folks that operate in these spaces is access to capital. Access to capital, access to capital, access to capital. We have Black entrepreneurs all over the world, all over this country, often facing challenges in accessing access to startup capital, including venture capital funding. You may know this, Black women, women of color, business founders, received only 0.038% of venture capital dollars. So to put that in context, $288 billion is allocated each year through the venture capital infrastructure. And of the $288 billion, only 0.38% goes to women of color. That is something that should be alarming to all of us. So if you want to start your own business and you're looking for investors, you're looking for people to actually support you and grow that business, it's going to be difficult for you to find that in the current infrastructure. So access to capital is incredibly important and one of the main obstacles that we face. A second, I would say, is market access and contracts. Black-owned technology companies often encounter challenges in securing contracts and assessing markets dominated by larger, more established firms. So they have to overcome those barriers every single day, and we have to think about how we foster supply diversity initiatives. What I mean by that, for those who may not know, you know, if I run a company, I'm in the business also of buying products and services. If I'm buying products and services, and I'm only buying products and services from non-Black people or non-people of color, that's going to exacerbate the problem. So this idea of market access and contracts is incredibly important. And I would say another challenge is global digital divide. Digital inclusion efforts, like ensuring access to soft and hard infrastructure, can really help bridge the digital divide for marginalized communities, but that's often quite difficult to do because we don't have access to it. And then I would say, finally, we're talking about building collaborative infrastructures and systems. And we don't have that ability in many cases because we're excluded from the process. So bringing together stakeholders from government, from industry, from the not-for-profit sector to help create a supportive ecosystem for Black entrepreneurs in tech is also, I think, a significant barrier.
I'm so glad you mentioned contracting, because I was going to ask you about that. And because you teed that up, you know, outside of what I do here, I have a small business also, and we've been asked several times, you know, we participate in bidding processes. And typically I would avoid that because the barrier to just complete the applications, particularly when you're talking about governments and whether it's local, municipal government or federal, forget federal, that's a whole other beast. But, you know, I'm just like, you know, it'll take me a month just to respond. And then you got to try to win it, you know, so you'll spend 40, 80, you know, 120 hours just trying to respond to an RFP and then may not even get it. So how do small businesses, particularly Black owned small businesses, position themselves? And I guess I'm phrasing that in a way of, is it designed that way to keep us out because they know we can't spend the time to do this?
Yeah. You know, I had the privilege of serving in government for 12 years. And I had the privilege of serving as counsel to the governor of New York, the first Black man to have that role. And you think of the state of New York being a progressive place, I happen to have the privilege of serving as the first black person, black man, I should say, to serve as counsel for the governor. There were black women that served in that role, but unfortunately, I remained the only black man to serve in that role. And when I served in that role, I had, again, the privilege of drafting and working on legislation that included the Minority and Women-Owned Business Program. So this is a program that exists in New York and other parts of the country. The goal is to increase opportunities for minority contractors and women contractors to get business with the state of New York. And that exists in many other parts of the country. Now, to your point, the systems, I believe, were created in such a burdensome way that it makes it difficult for people just to go through the application process. And when I was there, one of the key goals that I had was, how do we demystify this process and how do we make it simpler? Now you will hear on the other side, people say, well, we need to keep this process as is because we're concerned about fraud. That's the argument why these programs, the application process is so difficult, is they argue that we need to make sure that we eliminate or reduce or address fraud. And I would say that obviously is a legitimate concern.
So what they say but about voter IDs too, yeah.
Exactly. That may be a legitimate concern, but what you can't answer for me is why, of the billions of dollars we have allocated out in contracting, only 0.X% are going to black and brown people. Why is that?
Yeah.
And no one was able to answer that question, which is why I worked with a large and very talented team in advancing that legislation, but also breaking down the barriers to entry for people, right? Making sure that it was easier for people to get those contracts. And also, importantly, holding the agencies accountable, right? Because in many of these cases, the agencies could grant what's called waivers. If they couldn't find a minority contractor or a woman contractor, they would grant a waiver to a white-owned business to do the work. And what we did when I was in government is eliminate that waiver process so that it went through an additional review process that agencies didn't have the right just to grant those waivers. And I think that's what we need in many parts of the country is additional accountability efforts to make sure that market access and contracts are actually available to black entrepreneurs who are seeking to do business with government agencies around the country.
Yeah, I love that.
AT&T Connects and Ode to Podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises, or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
Seeing our communities grow and thrive is something we care deeply about here at Black Tech Green Money. State Farm Insurance also cares about the growth of black communities. They're actively investing in programs and initiatives that help provide financial literacy, give early career advice, and grow black-owned businesses, thus leading to generational wealth, which helps protect the future of our communities. We want to build a future that we all can be proud of. State Farm understands that representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. It also requires active sponsorship of programs like the AXO, a year-long program that recognizes and rewards high school students for their academic and cultural achievements.
along with funding programs like Project Ready, a national Urban League program committed to educational achievement of Black and brown youth that has awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to date. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and can have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
If you're looking for the most epic place on earth, let's start at the base of a massive waterfall. Then trek through the thick jungle. Then climb to the peak of a snowy mountaintop. Then once you get there, keep going. Because with intelligent 4x4 and 7 drive modes and a Nissan Pathfinder, the search is the real adventure.
Available feature. Intelligent 4x4 cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
One of the things that we don't talk about, I think, enough, you know, on this podcast is addiction. And we talk about mental health, we talk about things like that, but we don't talk about addiction, particularly in technology, often. And you've been instrumental in creating treatment centers for addiction and et cetera, and even advancing economic empowerment through policy. And I wonder, like, what are the wraparounds or the wraparounds that should be there, or the broken bridges between mental health addiction and financial stability? So, like, because we don't correlate those two often enough in our community.
There is a direct relationship between financial instability and mental health and addiction. We have a huge mental health crisis in this country that often gets ignored. And you see it exacerbated in large cities, right? If you live in a large city like New York City or Los Angeles, you may see evidence of mental health on the streets. And in some cases, not all, but in some cases reflected to people who are homeless. And we're not addressing that issue sufficiently in states and cities around the country. Underserved communities, including low-income neighborhoods and communities of color, disproportionately experience what we call social determinants of health.
Yeah.
And that really contributes to mental health challenges and addiction and financial instability. And if we're not really going to address the social determinants of health, it makes it a lot more difficult for people to get to that place where they can be financially stable. And our communities face systemic barriers in addressing healthcare, or accessing, I should say, healthcare, accessing education, accessing employment opportunities, affordable housing. So, you know, folks often like to talk about mental health in a vacuum, but it has to be directly tied to healthcare, education, employment, and housing. If I can't afford an apartment, I more than likely won't be able to sustain a job. Yeah. And if I have a mental health challenge and it's not treated, that's going to affect my ability to get a job or to hold on to a home. And that perpetuates into a vicious cycle of poverty. So I had the privilege of helping to create an addiction treatment center in Los Angeles that was and remains quite successful. And I think we need more of that work, and we need more focus on those areas, because we tend to disaggregate them and think of poverty and mental health in one bucket and then financial stability in another.
Yeah. You've had an incredible story. I want to talk about Alfonso for a second, just the man, you know, the human. Talk about mentorship that you've received, and, you know, what are some of the most important lessons you've learned?
I've had the privilege of working with and for some incredible people who took the time to invest in me. And before I even talk about my professional life, I'll just talk about my family.
Yeah.
You know, my parents, my uncles, my aunts, my cousins, that have taken the time and continue to take the time to pour energy and love and attention into me and for me. And that serves as a foundation and a building block for creating the person that I am today. You know, when folks say, how did you get to this place? I often say, not by myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't get here alone, right? If my parents were not, well, and I used to call them dictators, if they were not such dictators in making sure that they pushed us to read and to write and to engage in different cultures and different languages, I wouldn't have the scope and the perspective that I have today. And it wouldn't have led me to practice law. It wouldn't have led me to do the work that I've done. But when I got into those professional spaces, I also found people that invested in me, from Joanne Epps, who was the former dean of the Temple Law School where I went to law school, or to Clifford Scott Green, who was the judge that I clerked for, one of the first Black judges on the federal bench. And I clerked for him. And one of the things that he said to me that will always stick with me, he says, people often arrive at conclusions with too little evidence.
Hmm. Wow.
And he said that to me in the early 2000s when I clerked for him. And I think about that often, especially today, in an environment where people reach conclusions based on a tweet without actually understanding the facts. And drawing conclusions about marginalized communities that are in many cases false. And that mentorship and that sponsorship over the decades that I've been doing this work has really helped not only refine my approach and my thinking on a lot of the work that I do, but also my humanity. You know, as we become more successful, it's very easy to forget where you come from. It's very easy to forget about the person who is has less opportunities than you, because you're constantly moving forward, constantly reaching higher. And another mentor told me very early on, be careful who you are kind to on your way up. You may meet them on your way down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I often think about that ladder, because we have highs and lows in our lives. And we always have to think about the humanity that we exhibit in how we communicate with people, how we treat people, and how we live our lives.
I love that. And, you know, one of the things that your work makes me think about, the humanity in DEI work, and it's under attack today. And specifically, I want to talk about having access to these opportunities. Like, you know, I'm on a college board. I'm chair of the board at a university. And we're faced with, you know, we can't even ask questions about, you know, what's your background? You know, when you talk about scholarshiping or donors who specifically designated their dollars for Black students, we can't do that today. And that's across the country. And in so many other places, venture capital firms who were set up for Black people are having challenges in doing this. What do we do? What do we do to ensure we still have, you know, distribution channels for opportunity?
So I think there are a few things that we should do. First, I think we need to understand the landscape that is DNI. What I mean by that is, affirmative action and DNI exists for white people. It is called nepotism, and it is called legacy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When I was in law school, Janet Reno, who was the former attorney general, came and spoke about affirmative action, and she said, I am a product of affirmative action. Why? Because either her father or an uncle or someone knew someone at the university that she was ultimately accepted into. And we don't call it affirmative action, but that's what it is. It is sanctioned nepotism and sanctioned promotional opportunities for those who are white or who are not Black.
Yeah.
So let's understand the landscape. We need to understand that it's nepotism and legacy. And that has existed for decades and continue to perpetuate this system of inequality. So that's first. Second, I think ensuring access to opportunities for historically underserved and marginalized groups requires advocacy, it requires policy reform, it requires community engagement, and it requires an ongoing commitment to the principles that we call D&I, right? So we have to make sure that we're willing to advocate for the idea of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Because what is the alternative? The alternative is that we are accepting institutions being non-diverse and non-inclusive.
Yeah.
We are accepting workplaces being non-diverse and non-inclusive. We are accepting that we are less than. Ultimately, by refusing to commit to D&I and the principles undergirding D&I, what we're saying is that we're less than, and we know we're not,
mm-hmm.
right? We know we're not. There is no reason why many of these boardrooms are not diverse. You can't tell me you cannot find a qualified Black or brown person to serve on a board. You can't find a qualified Black or brown person to serve as a CEO. You can't find a qualified Black or brown person to work in your law firm.
Yeah.
So the advocacy, the policy reform, the community engagement, the ongoing commitment to D&I principles are incredibly important, and understanding the landscape that nepotism is really another word for affirmative action.
Yeah.
Legacy is another word for affirmative action. And we need to understand how all of those principles coincide with the pushback that we're getting now.
Yeah.
We're seeing that there's been a lot of progress, or some progress, in education, in business, in finance, and now it's being dismantled. And we have to fight against that dismantling of affirmative action, against D&I, against inclusive policies, because they will directly affect all of us.
AT&T Connects and Ode to Podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises, or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future, building off the hard work our parents have done before us. We all are looking to create generational wealth so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and brown youth. To date, participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags-to-riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
If you're looking for the most epic place on earth, let's start at the base of a massive waterfall.
Then trek through the thick jungle.
Then climb to the peak of a snowy mountaintop. Then once you get there, keep going. Because with intelligent 4x4 and 7 drive modes and a Nissan Pathfinder, the search is the real adventure.
Available feature. Intelligent 4x4 cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
So help me make sense of this, because if you look at qualified studies, you know, if you have diverse people, you do better in business. That those are facts. Like, you make more money. Which is what we are in the belief of, like, that's what they want. They want to make more money. They want more power, more influence. And so if I show you businessman, businesswoman statistics that say you make more money when you have diverse boardrooms, you make more money when you have diverse rosters of staff, and then you still is, I don't want to use the word hate, but do you really not like us that much that you are willing to make less to not put us at the table?
Well, I mean, you pose the elephant in the room, right? That's the question. There's data that has been issued for decades. We have report after report after report showing the business case for diversity, showing that if you have a diverse team, you're more successful. If you have a diverse team, you're more innovative. If you have a diverse team, you will have a more sustainable bottom line over the long term. So if I'm a business leader, I'm assigning value,
yeah,
financial value to diversity. And if I'm not, then I either believe that Black and brown people are less than, or I'm willing to negate I'm willing to ignore the financial loss. I'm willing to ignore the financial loss that my company is going to experience as a result of not embracing diversity.
Wow.
I mean, that's how we should think about it, because no one is denying the studies. No one is saying the studies are wrong. And we're talking about Harvard Business School to McKinsey. They've all issued studies showing the value of diversity to companies across the globe. And this is not just a US-based issue. So if I'm a CEO and I ignore that, I either believe that Black and brown people are less than, or I'm willing to suffer financial loss.
So
those are the two options.
Yeah. And so I've had this conversation on this podcast a lot, and I'm really interested in your take on this. So there's two conversations to be had. One, there's, you can go to the Apples, the Googles, the Teslas, the whatevers of the world and say, you should hire more Black people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Make that case. I personally am not in, I want to build my own table. I'm not asking for a seat at nobody's table. I'm going to go build my own table. And I recognize that there's value in both perspectives and both efforts. And I just wonder what your thoughts are on those two things.
Right. I think we need both. And I think you're exactly right. Not every single person is an entrepreneur. Not every single person has what it takes to be an entrepreneur, to be your own boss, to worry about making payments, to, you know, pay corporate taxes 4 times a year.
Jeez,
not everyone has that. I know, God, you know what I'm talking
good
about.
God, yeah.
Right? But we should all have the opportunity to explore our interest in being an entrepreneur. So that's one. The flip side is that if we want to work for others, if we want to work in an environment that we don't own, we should also have the ability to do that. I mean, we arguably live in an economy, a capitalist structure that's free enterprise, which is really fascinating to me. Those who are against diversity and inclusion ostensibly support free enterprise. So if you support free enterprise in a capitalist structure, why are you against D&I?
Yeah.
Why are you pushing CEOs to move away from diversity, but at the same time say that you embrace free enterprise? You can't do both. Right? You either embrace free enterprise and allow companies to create the structures that they deem most appropriate to achieve, to advance economic opportunity and the bottom line, or you don't.
Yeah.
And so that's why I find this entire movement against D&I intellectually dishonest. It's not really about D&I. You know, this is about a fear of a minority-majority district in a few years.
Yeah.
This is about a fear of entrepreneurs getting to the point where they have so much in resources and access that you can't control them.
Yeah.
And that's the larger narrative that we're fighting against.
All right. In the 3 minutes I got left, I got two more for you. So I'm one, I want to do this real quick. Like, what is the imperative we have to find roads to success for the formerly incarcerated?
That is one of the most important things we need to do. Look, we all know the Rockefeller drug laws, the criminal justice laws that have been passed, not only in the state of New York, but in other parts of the country, disproportionately impacted people of color. We know, and many people know how the sentencing structures were different if you had cocaine versus crack cocaine, right? And we know the impact that it had on communities of color. With respect to those who are justice impacted, who are largely Black and Brown, when they are released, we have a responsibility to make sure that we open up opportunities for them. Otherwise, we're simply perpetuating a cycle of mass incarceration and disproportionately impacting our communities. When I was in the governor's office, I worked on critical pieces of criminal justice reforms, from solitary confinement reforms to legislation to curtail allowing minors to be treated as adults in prison. We called it Raise the Age. And I just feel very strongly that, you know, the criminal justice system being what it is, we either believe in rehabilitation or we don't. We either believe that people can go in, serve their time, and be released, and then serve as contributing members of society, or we don't. And if we do, then we have to make sure we create an infrastructure to support them, and but them are largely Black and Brown.
And the last one is, you know, obviously we're having a humongous conversation about AI, and I wonder what concerns Alfonso about AI and what roads we have to solve whatever concerns it is that you have. So a little bit of a two-parter there for you.
I'm really concerned about AI because I think we often think of the challenges that AI presents, but we fail to think about the opportunities. And we need to think about the opportunities now. Now, when you think about the challenges that AI presents, we certainly know that in some industries, AI will result in eliminating those industries. So you think of language access as an example, right? You had companies that were providing language access services. Well, pretty soon you'll be able to, and you can in many instances, communicate on your phone in almost any language. So you may not need the same types of services that we currently provide or have been providing. But at the same time, there are opportunities to expand access to financial services. There are opportunities to expand community development. There are opportunities to maximize technology. And we, as Black and Brown people, should be looking for those opportunities, not only to invest, but to create our businesses, right? Because that is the future. AI has been with us for a long time. And many people say, what is this AI thing? And I said, look at your phone.
Yeah.
Siri is AI.
That's right.
And it's been here for a while. So as we think about technology for the future, I think it's important and imperative that we think of investments in this arena, and we think about how we can take our resources and create businesses that can better serve our communities.
Black Tech Green Money is a production of Blavity Afrotech on the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartMedia. It's produced by Morgan DeBon and me, Will Lucas, with additional production support by Sarah Ergen and Love Beach. Special thank you to Micah Davis and Kate McDonald. Learn more about my guests and other tech disruptors and innovators at Afrotech.com. Enjoying Black Tech Green Money? Share this with somebody. Go get your money. Peace and love.
Check me out at the annual Black Effect Podcast Festival happening Saturday, April 27th in Atlanta. Live podcasts are on deck from some of your favorite shows, including this one, Black Tech Green Money, and also some of the best podcasts in the game, like Deeply Well with Devi Brown and Carefully Reckless. Atlanta is one of my favorite cities in the world. I lived there for 2 years, actually. And my worldview, seeing us successful in every industry and not having any limits on our potential, largely was shaped by Atlanta. So to be there with you, doing this podcast, talking about how we build or leverage technology to build wealth, come on, man, it doesn't get better. I want to see you there. Get your tickets today at blackeffect.com/podcastfestival.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
Every pass, shot, and dribble is immediately consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real.
Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, blood, and tears, real legacies.
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
You already know when and where to find these moments of unscripted, pure entertainment.
Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
You ever get the feeling the city walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating your soul? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe chase some elk, fish a private stream. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there, and finding your own piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forest, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, location, the kind of hunting or fishing you dream of. Land.com. It's where the adventure begins.